The following is a class on Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 1, Text 2, given by His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj, recorded on August 21st, 2001, at Prabhupada Desh, Italy.
Completely rejecting all religious activities which are materially motivated, this Bhagavad Purana propounds the highest truth, which is understandable by those devotees who are fully pure in heart. The highest truth is reality distinguished from illusion for the welfare of all. Such truth uproots the threefold miseries. This beautiful Bhagavatam, compiled by the great sage Vyasadeva in his maturity, is sufficient in itself for God-realization. What is the need of any other scripture? As soon as one attentively and submissively hears the message of Bhagavatam, by this culture of knowledge, the Supreme Lord is established within his heart. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Religion includes four primary subjects, namely pious activities, economic development, satisfaction of the senses, and finally liberation from material bondage. Irreligious life is a barbarous condition. Indeed, human life begins when religion begins. Eating, sleeping, fearing, and mating are the four principles of animal life. These are common both to animals and to human beings. But religion is the extra function of the human being. Without religion, human life is no better than animal life. Therefore, in human societies, there is some form of religion which aims at self-realization and which makes reference to man's eternal relationship with God. In the lower stages of human civilization, there is always competition to lord it over material nature. Or in other words, there is a continuous rivalry to satisfy the senses. Driven by such consciousness, man turns to religion. He thus performs pious activities or religious functions in order to gain something material. But if such material gains are obtainable in other ways, then so-called religion is neglected. This is the situation in modern civilization. Man is thriving economically, so at present he is not very interested in religion. Churches, mosques, or temples are now practically vacant. Men are more interested in factories, shops, and cinemas than in religious places which were erected by their forefathers. This practically proves that religion is performed for some economic gains. Economic gains are needed for sense gratification. Often when one is baffled in the pursuit of sense gratification, he takes to salvation and tries to become one with the Supreme Lord. Consequently, all these states are simply different types of sense gratification. In the Vedas, the above mentioned four activities are prescribed in the regulative way so that there will not be any undue competition for sense gratification. But Srimad Bhagavatam is transcendental to all these sense gratificatory activities. It is purely transcendental literature which can be understood only by the pure devotees of the Lord who are transcendental to competitive sense gratification. In the material world, there is a keen competition between animal and animal, man and man, community and community, nation and nation. But the devotees of the Lord rise above such competitions. They do not compete with the materialist because they are on the path back to Godhead, where life is eternal and blissful. Such transcendentalists are non-envious and pure in heart. In the material world, everyone is envious of everyone else, and therefore there is competition. But the transcendental devotees of the Lord are not only free from material envy, but are well-wishers to everyone, and they strive to establish a competition-less society with God in the center. The contemporary socialist conception of a competitionless society is artificial, because in the socialist state, there is competition for the post of dictator. From the point of view of the Vedas, or from the point of view of common human activities, sense gratification is the basis of material life. There are three paths mentioned in the Vedas. One involves fruitive activities to gain promotion to better planets. Another involves worshipping different demigods for promotion to the planets of the demigods. And another involves realizing the absolute truth and his impersonal feature and becoming one with him. The impersonal aspect of the absolute truth is not the highest. Above the impersonal feature is the Paramatma feature, and above this is the personal feature of the absolute truth, or Bhagavan. Srimad Bhagavatam gives information about the absolute truth in his personal feature. It is higher than impersonalistic literature and higher than the Jnanakanda division of the Vedas. It is even higher than the Karmakanda division, and even higher than the Upasanakanda division, because it recommends the worship of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna. In the Karmakanda, there is competition to reach heavenly planets for better sense gratification, and there is similar competition in the Jnanakanda and the Upasanakanda. The Srimad Bhagavatam is superior to all these, because it aims at the supreme truth, which is the substance or the root of all categories. From Srimad Bhagavatam, one can come to know the substance as well as the categories. The substance is the absolute truth, the supreme Lord, and all emanations are relative forms of energy. Nothing is apart from the substance. But at the same time, the energies are different from the substance. This conception is not contradictory. Srimad Bhagavatam explicitly promulgates this simultaneously one and different philosophy of the Vedanta Sutra, which begins with the Janmadyasya Sutra. This knowledge that the energy of the Lord is simultaneously one and different from the Lord is an answer to the mental speculator's attempt to establish the energy as the absolute. When this knowledge is factually understood, one sees the conceptions of monism and dualism to be imperfect. Development of this transcendental consciousness, grounded in the conception of simultaneously one and different, leads one immediately to the stage of freedom from the threefold miseries. The threefold miseries are, 1, those miseries which arise from the mind and body, 2, those miseries inflicted by other living beings, and 3, those miseries arising from natural catastrophes, over which one has no control. Srimad Bhagavatam begins with the surrender of the devotee unto the Absolute Person. The devotee is fully aware that he is one with the Absolute and at the same time in the eternal position of servant to the Absolute. In the material conception, one falsely thinks himself the Lord of all he surveys, and therefore he is always troubled by the threefold miseries of life. But as soon as one comes to know his real position as transcendental servant, he at once becomes freed from all miseries. As long as the living entity is trying to master material nature, there is no possibility of his becoming servant of the Supreme. Service to the Lord is rendered in pure consciousness of one's spiritual identity. By service, one is immediately freed from material encumbrances. We are reading today from the second verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam is unique among holy scriptures. This uniqueness is herein declared. This material world is a place where people come because they want to exploit the resources of material nature for sense gratification. Srila Prabhupada explains so clearly in his own simple way that the very basis of material civilization is sense gratification. Anandamayo vyashat. The soul is pleasure-seeking. The soul must find pleasure. The material existence is a place where everyone is forgetting Krishna due to being covered by the three modes of material nature. Because we have forgotten Krishna, we have also forgotten who we are. Because our true identity is in relationship with Him. When your basic premise is a mistake, then everything that follows is a mistake. Because we have forgotten our relationship with Krishna, therefore, everything that we create within our civilization is simply wrong, leading humanity in the wrong direction. But the Supreme Lord is so merciful that He descends again and again, or sends His devotees to somehow or other guide people back on the right path. But most people in this world, they are so much addicted to their egoistic way of life that if they are told, abandon everything, surrender to me, they'll reject it. Therefore, out of causeless mercy, the Lord reveals scriptures and religious processes to somehow or other get people to follow His authority. Thus, we find throughout the world that the majority of people, they follow religion for the purpose of improving their materialistic life. The fastest growing religion in America teaches that family life is eternal. That once you are married, then with your wife and with your children and your dog and your cat, you live forever. And you get your own planet to live with your family. And you can even create universes. Something like Lord Brahma. So this is very popular. I can be reunited with all my loved ones who have died. And I have insurance that I'll never, ever, ever break the ties with my wife and with my children. So they are building incredible churches because they have billions of dollars being donated and millions of people joining. And no doubt they are pious because religion means to promote piety. They certainly believe in God and God will supply them. So this is called karmakanda. Worshipping either the Lord or the various demigods to improve one's material condition of life. I was speaking the other day about a very interesting experience I had in India in 1970. I had just been living in the Himalayas with sadhus, yogis, who were totally renounced from material life. They were severely renounced from material enjoyment. They lived so simple and so austere. So I was thinking, this is actual religion. So I had to travel for some purpose, and I went through New Delhi. In the center of Delhi is a place called Connaught Circus. I was sleeping under a tree in that park. One evening I was walking and I came by this temple. And there was very intense religious activity going on in this temple. And I saw there were some families doing worship. They had folded palms. Most of them were crying. They were chanting mantras with such sincerity, really concentrated in everything they were doing, bowing down again and again and again. They were continuously offering different articles. And there was Brahmins doing yajnas and chanting mantras. And I was thinking, these people are very, very religious people. I'm going to stay here and watch this incredible ceremony of worship. So it went on for several hours. There were offerings being made and yajnas being performed and mantras being chanted. And meanwhile, these people who are participating, they just looked so humble and so devoted. They just looked like it was the last moment of their life that they were worshiping God. So when the ceremony ended, they were all bowing down again and again. And I saw the father who was most involved in this worship. I approached him because I was a very young searcher of the truth, so I wanted to learn from elevated souls. I asked him, can you tell me, you know, the nature of this worship and what you are hoping to achieve through it? He said, this is our family tradition. This is the deity of Ganesh. And whenever we start a new business, we do this puja so that the business will make lots of money. So tomorrow we are opening a new factory so that we make much profit. We are worshiping God today. So I was very eager to go back to Himalayas after hearing that. But most people, they worship God because either they're suffering materially or they want better enjoyment. But Krishna tells us in Gita, Abhrama bhuvana loka punar avatanojana mamu peta tukonte apunar janmana vidyate. From the highest planet down to the lowest, they're all places of misery because you have to die. Janma mrityu jara vyadi. These are miserable conditions. Birth is very much suffering. How the mother suffers in giving birth. And the baby, they always come out crying. They never come out laughing. They're not crying in ecstasy. They're crying in misery. They don't know who they are or where they are or what's going on and who's around me. And they're being crushed through a small passageway to come out. Birth is a very, very painful situation. And death is also painful. Right now, if you have a little bit of pain, you think, oh, why is this happening to me? But at the time of death, every one of your organs just cease to function. Depending on the particular variety of death, maybe fast, maybe slow, but it's very, very painful. Your body is actually in the process of rapid dissolution. And everything that you know, everything that you love, is being immediately dragged away from you forever. Therefore, everybody throughout their life, they fear death. That's this material world. Can you imagine? Even a small child, as soon as a small child understands what life is, immediately they begin to fear death. Death for themselves, death for their loved ones. I knew one little boy, didn't know much about death or anything else. He was living a happy life, and he had a pet turtle. And when the turtle died, he was completely devastated. It was just inconceivable to this child that my little turtle will never crawl on my hand anymore forever. Such an inconceivable misery that death, little turtle, just final, ceased to exist. And then, a couple years later,
grandfather dies, grandmother dies. Then if friends die, then the mother and father dies. And in life, there's always the fear that at any moment I may die. Oh, for a materialistic person, death creates terrible suffering. And then we have disease. This is something we're all aware of. Such suffering bodily ailments create. Even if you're young and strong, you get some terrible disease and you simply suffer. Or you become helpless. There's so much you want to do, but you just can't do it. And all of your plans for enjoyment are just devastated when there's terrible disease. You can't enjoy anything. That disease is for everyone. Who in this room have never gotten sick? Haribo, sickness comes. And then there is old age. Oh, what a miserable situation. When you're young, you don't even think about what it really is going to be like in the future of my life if I somehow live till I'm old. Body is breaking down and just aches and pains just constantly harassing you. And when you're young and you have aches and pains, you think that after some time it will get better. But the misery of old age is when you have aches and pains, you know it's only going to get worse because I'm getting older. Eyes start failing and your memory starts failing and your organs stop functioning properly and different types of pains shooting up and down your body. That's old age. And in materialistic civilization, nobody likes old people. The older you get, the more you become a burden, simply a liability. There's nothing beautiful or attractive about you. Somehow or other, most in the Western world, usually children just abandon their old parents because it interferes with their sense gratification. Sometimes living alone, other times they put you in some old person's home because you're too helpless to survive yourself, and there's no love. People who are just professionals just, you know, give you your medicine. Generally, old age is a very lonely and miserable condition of life. And it's coming. We're getting closer to that stage at every second. So this material world, with its threefold miseries, is a very suffering place. So intelligent people see, what is the purpose, what is the future in material sense gratification? So often such persons take to the path of salvation. They want to just end the sufferings once and for all. Because I have this body, I have this personality, it's the cause of so much suffering, therefore no more form, no more personality, then there'll be no more suffering. So rare souls take to the religion for the purpose of giving up sense gratification and attaining liberation. But in liberation there is no love, there is no positive spiritual satisfaction. It is an unnatural situation for the soul. Therefore, even after having attained Brahman liberation, after some time one is destined to fall down again into this material world, looking for some loving relationship, because it's lonely up there in Brahman. Krishna tells us in Gita, sarva dharman parityaja mam ekam sharanam braja. Abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender unto me. I shall protect you. This ultimate instruction of the Bhagavad Gita is where Srimad Bhagavatam begins. It is unique. Srimad Bhagavatam is called the Paramhamsa Samhita. It is especially enjoyed by Paramhamsas who are on the highest perfectional stage of liberation. And it is also called Paramhamsa Samhita because anyone who faithfully and submissively studies Srimad Bhagavatam will become Paramhamsa. From the very beginning, Srimad Bhagavatam rejects all sub-religious principles. It is foremost of scriptures because it deals exclusively with pure, unalloyed devotional service to Lord Krishna. We read in the Srimad Bhagavatam itself, Vyasadeva had compiled the four Vedas. the Upanishads, Mahabharata, Itihasras, Puranas. He was living in his ashram on the banks of the Saraswati River in Badrikashram. But he was feeling a very great dissatisfaction in his heart. And he could not understand why this was. He had already compiled, for the benefit of humanity, so many profound Vedic literatures which authoritatively describe history, all meant for the one purpose of elevating people toward God. You see, Vedavyas, he was living only for the welfare of others. Himself, he was a perfectly liberated Paramahamsa. There was nothing for him to lament about. He was Atmaram, self-satisfied. But the nature of a Vaishnava is they are paradukaduki. They suffer when they see other people suffering. He really wanted to serve the Lord, and he wanted to serve by preaching. But he was dissatisfied because he felt that his service to all living beings, was deficient. So he was lamenting. And then his Guru Maharaj, Sripad Narada Muni, appeared. Narada Muni questioned Vedavyas in so many ways and ultimately declared to him that the reason you're dissatisfied is because you have actually cheated the world. You have given the world these scriptures which promise artha kama dhamma moksha. You worship God or the gods and you'll get economic development, you'll get sense gratification, you'll become very pious and religious, and ultimately you may get liberation also. These are called the four purusharthas. But you have not given yet the world unadulterated understanding of the purushartha shiromani, the crest jewel of all goals of life. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained, what is that ultimate goal of life? Prema pumartha mahan. To love God is the great goal. Ecstatic love, that is the only real necessity for the soul. Everything else is a distraction. Now, no doubt in the Padma Purana, the Vishnu Purana, the Mahabharata, the Upanishads, love of God is described. In some Puranas we find Brahma Vaivarta Purana, Vishnu Purana, Padma Purana, pastimes of Radha and Krishna being described in Vrindavan. In Mahabharata, approximately 100,000 slokas, but Bhagavad Gita is within the Mahabharata and it teaches pure devotional service. This is pure devotional service. Always think of me. Always think of me. Worship me. Become my devotee. Offer your homage unto me. In this way you will come to me without fail. So Vedavyas did give pure devotional service. However, in each of these literatures, pure devotional service may have been given, sometimes covered, sometimes little uncovered, but it was always mixed up with other sub-religious principles. Let us take Mahabharata, for example. The entire body of literature is primarily simply artha kama dhamma moksha, to elevate oneself through economic development, sense gratification, religiosity, and liberation. But pure devotional service is also in there. It's mixed in. Now, Mahabharata is 100,000 verses. And Madhvacharya, he went to the Himalayas to meet Vyasadev. When Madhvacharya was at Adi Badri meeting his Guru Maharaj, Srila Vyasadev, the author of Vedas, he wanted to learn from him how to write a proper commentary of Mahabharata. And for those of you who are aware of Madhvacharya's commentary of Mahabharata, it's not long at all. It's quite a short literature. His Holiness Srila Hridayananda Maharaj was telling me about this. He said that Madhvacharya only took the sections of Mahabharata that deal with devotional service and just didn't even bother commenting on the rest. So Narada Muni told Vedavyas, you are suffering in distress because you have not yet given the world a pure literature which exclusively deals with unalloyed devotion. You have not yet, by all irrefutable terms, established Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the source of all incarnations, and revealed his loving pastimes to the world. And with this instruction of Narada Muni, Vedavyas compiled the Bhagavad Purana. From the very beginning, the verses we are studying yesterday and today, we find that the Bhagavatam is only going to discuss the highest, purest state of unalloyed devotion and how to achieve it. And we will find in the Srimad Bhagavatam the story of the Lord's relationship with his pure devotees at various times and places. The Lord's relationships with the Pandavas. The pure devotion of Shukadeva Goswami. We will read about the pure devotion of the Prachetas. How, due to their unalloyed love, they had the personal darshan of Lord Vishnu. We'll read about little 5-year-old Dhruva Maharaj, who rejected everything of this world, and due to his pure love and devotion, he had the darshan of the Lord. This is Bhagavatam. Dhruva Maharaj was 5 years old. The Lord offered him any benediction he wanted. Dhruva Maharaj said, I don't want anything of this world. It's all useless. I have seen you. I love you. I am happy. He declared that the things of this world, even elevation to heavenly planets, even becoming a ruler greater than Brahma, with greater wealth than Brahma, he said it was all like broken pieces of glass. But he had found the rare diamond of the darshan of the Lord. We read about Prahlad Maharaj, small child, quite helpless by his own powers. But he had such faith and such pure devotion. He was willing to accept incredible degrees of persecution and suffering just to remain faithful and loyal to Lord Krishna. We read about Ambarish Maharaj, such a great selfless devotee. Even the most powerful mystic yogi tried to destroy him, but Ambarish Maharaj, just with folded hands, he just prayed, Krishna, I'm yours. You can do anything you like with me. Ambarish Maharaj was always protected by Krishna because he was 100% engaged in Krishna's service. Although king, with his hands, he cleaned the temple. With his legs, he walked to the temple. With his eyes, he saw the deities. His nose, he smelled the flowers and incense of prasad. With his mouth, he was either chanting the names of the Lord, discussing the pastimes of the Lord, or taking prasad of the Lord. Ears, he was hearing Harikatha. With his head, he was bowing down. With all his wealth, he worshipped the Lord. Pure devotee. This is Srimad Bhagavatam. We read the story of Ranti Dev. Even though he was on the verge of death, because he had no food and no water, when an insignificant chandala came asking for some food and some dogs were thirsty for water, he gave the food and water that was meant to save his life to them and prayed to the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna that I find no greater happiness in life than willing to die and suffer for the welfare of others. We read about Queen Kunti, who has put through so many calamities in her life. And from her very heart, she was praying to Krishna, please keep those calamities upon me so I always remember you. And ultimately, by hearing all these narrations with the teachings and prayers of these great souls, we learn what is pure selfless devotion. We learn from these great, great personalities how to always remember Krishna in a spirit of humility.
From these great souls, we learn how we can bear any amount of suffering in this world blissfully if we simply remember Krishna. These are all devotees with exclusive devotion. Not a trace of artha, kama, dhamma, moksha in their lives. Everything is for Krishna. And by going through these 9 cantos and carefully studying, assimilating, and following the footsteps of these great personalities, then ultimately Shukadev Goswami and Vyasadeva take us into the journey of the 10th canto, where Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Absolute Truth, the source of all incarnations, personally descends into this world. And he reveals the eternal pastimes of Vrindavan. Vrindavan is the highest planet in the spiritual world. From Srimad Bhagavatam we read about the 5 intimate rasas of love that are eternally being enacted in Vrindavan. The relationship of neutrality, of servitude, of being the intimate confidential friend with Krishna. That is Sakya Ras. Vatsalya Ras is to actually love Krishna as one's own child. And Madhurya Ras is to love Krishna as a conjugal lover. And in Vrindavan, although these 5 rasas are eternally being manifested, they are all deeply influenced by this Madhurya Ras. So the pure devotion of the residents of Vrindavan is the highest, the most intense, and the sweetest. Then in Srimad Bhagavatam there are 5 chapters which describe the Ras Lila, which describes the total surrender of the gopis. The love of the gopis in Madhurya Ras includes the qualities of all the other rasas. How the gopis could conquer Krishna by their love. And ultimately, Srimad Bhagavatam declares that there is one gopi who Krishna left all other gopis to satisfy. Her unparalleled love and devotion is the source of all devotion. The Ladini Shakti of the Lord, Srimati Radharani. Srimad Bhagavatam describes how Krishna is controlled and cannot live without the love of Sri Radha. Thus, Srimad Bhagavatam begins with unalloyed, pure devotion and culminates in the ultimate love affair between Krishna and his own pleasure potency. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared in this world to teach us how to live according to the principles of Bhagavatam. He is the Srimad Bhagavatam incarnated. He called the Bhagavatam the Amalam Puranam, spotless Purana. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, so magnanimous, so merciful, he has given the highest conclusions of the Srimad Bhagavatam to the world freely. He is Radha and Krishna in one form. Srimad Bhagavatam, as we have said, ultimately concludes that the ultimate perfection of all knowledge is to understand Sri Radharani's love for Krishna and Krishna's love for Sri Radha. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Krishna with the complexion and the sentiment of Sri Radharani. And she is distributing freely to everyone without consideration of qualification or disqualification her own love through the chanting of the holy names. Therefore, after all is said and done in Srimad Bhagavatam, the 11th canto, 12th canto, it is described that Krishna Varnam Tvisa Krishnam Sangopangasha Parashanam Yogyai Sankirtanam Prayayajante Hishumedasha. In the age of Kali, those who have good intelligence, they will worship the Lord who appears in a beautiful golden form, along with his associates, congregationally chanting the names of Krishna. And the very last verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, 12th canto, Nama Sankirtanam Yasya Sarva Papa Pranashanam. All sins eradicated. Highest perfection of life available through Nam Sankirtan. Congregational chanting of the holy names. Therefore, we find Srila Prabhupada in his unlimited compassion wanted to give the perfect understanding of Srimad Bhagavatam to the world. You will find the introduction to his Srimad Bhagavatam is a biography sketch of Lord Chaitanya. Because without understanding the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, then the real treasure of Srimad Bhagavatam, pure unalloyed devotional service, cannot be attained. How Lord Chaitanya revered Srimad Bhagavatam. One time he heard the lectures of Srimad Bhagavatam by the most famous Bhagavatam teacher in all of Navadvip. His name was Devananda Pandit. And he was not a devotee. He was a great scholar. He mastered the ability to describe Srimad Bhagavatam in various philosophical ways that could totally enchant the minds of his audience. But he was not teaching unalloyed devotion. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu could not tolerate it. He screamed, he said, Devananda Pandit, you have no right to speak of Srimad Bhagavatam. You have no qualification, you are simply misleading people. Therefore I shall rip your Bhagavatam to pieces. He started running, but the devotees caught Lord Chaitanya and stopped him. Devananda Pandit was embarrassed, but still he was such a great famous scholar. He went on with his teachings. But later on in his life, he became very attached to one devotee named Vakreshwar Pandit. And he served him very, very humbly. And due to that attachment to a devotee and pleasing a devotee through service, his heart became soft and he could understand that Lord Chaitanya was the Supreme Lord. Sometime later, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came back to Navadvip from Jagannath Puri. There is a place called Kuligram. That is especially the place where Lord Chaitanya excused the offenses of so many envious people. So Devananda Pandit approached the Lord with great humility. The Lord said, because you have become attached to affectionately serving Vakreshwar Pandit, therefore you are forgiven. Vakreshwar Pandit is such a great devotee that wherever his feet touch, that becomes all the holy places. When he dances in kirtan, Krishna dances through him. He is an ocean of mercy and compassionate to all souls. Because you have received his blessings, you are now purified. Devananda Pandit said, I am a reciter of Srimad Bhagavatam all my life. Please tell me, how should I explain the teachings of Srimad Bhagavatam? Lord Chaitanya was emphatic, very strong. He said, when you discuss Srimad Bhagavatam, there should be no word that comes out of your mouth except pure devotional service. Every word of Srimad Bhagavatam from the beginning to the end describes nothing but exclusive unalloyed devotion to Krishna. Do not cheat people with any other interpretation. Srimad Bhagavatam is the crest jewel of all literatures. Its only purpose is to awaken pure love for Krishna. Sri Gauranga Mahaprabhu ki jai. He described to Devananda Pandit that in all the worlds there are many scriptures, but the topmost crest jewel of all scriptures is Srimad Bhagavatam. In the Western scriptures, there is a description of devotion to God, but it's generally understanding God as the creator, as the all-powerful. He can create, he can destroy, he can punish, he can reward. And in the Vedas, there are so many descriptions of various demigods and incarnations. But Srimad Bhagavatam specifically deals with bringing a person to the level of love for Krishna of Vrindavan, where the ultimate power of the sweetness of his beauty and love is manifested. And that same Krishna descended with his personal associates as Lord Chaitanya to actually give everyone the opportunity to become an assistant in the loving affairs of Radha and Krishna through purely chanting the holy names. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki, Gauranga Mahaprabhu ki. Thank you very much. It has been very wonderful to be with all of you. Thank you for tolerating me. You have proven your greatness and your tolerance toward me. Thank you. I pray that Srila Prabhupada continues to shower his affectionate blessings upon each of you, because those blessings can facilitate progressing toward the ultimate perfection of pure devotional service to Sri Krishna. You have in your temple Sri Sri Gaurani Thai. Parama Karuna Pahundui Janani Thai Gaura Chandra. They've come bestowing the supreme mercy and compassion to the world. Such a simple and joyful process. They've come to bring you all back home, back to Godhead. And they're appealing to you to assist them in bringing more and more souls back home, back to Godhead. Hare Krishna.